All right, here it is, episode number 621 today of Let There Be Talk on this November 22nd, a Monday, and it is brought to you by Cactus Radio Network, my podcast network, where you can find all of my podcasts for absolutely free at cactusradionetwork.com. Dark Fonzie, Let There Be Talk, The Grail, and At Home with Byron Katie. All at CactusRadioNetwork.com. Welcome aboard, everybody. It is Monday. I just got back from doing 14 shows in Las Vegas at the Comedy Cellar, and I got to say, 13 of them were fantastic. So you cannot beat that track record right there. 13 out of 14, we're good. I'll take it. I'm headed to Denver this weekend, and it's one of my all-time favorite clubs, and the club owner, Wendy, who I had on the podcast years ago, her story's amazing, but looking forward to going to the Comedy Works Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If you have any friends or family out there, or if you live there, get tickets and come see me immediately. I want to try to close this year out strong, with a lot of friends in the house. That is November, what is it, like 26, 27, 28, I believe. Tickets are at deandelray.com. And merch. I have all the new merch up right now. We got some Gertie merch. We got the Dark Fonzie merch. We have some hoodies, sweatshirts, t-shirts. We have the Dean Del Rey Perry Shaw collab shirt. It's all at the website, deandelray.com. This weekend is my last road dates for the year, and all of December I will just be working in Los Angeles at the Comedy Store. So, you know, going to be grinding it all the way to the new year. All right, we have a damn legend on today. It's another drummer. And not just another drummer. I'm talking about a full-blown king legend. Listen to this guy's fucking credits, all right? Vanilla Fudge, Ted Nugent, Cactus, Sly Stone, Pink Floyd, Paul Stanley, Michael Schenker, Marty Friedman, King Cobra, Blue Murder, Beck Bogart, A Piece, Rod Stewart. Played with Rod Stewart during the massive era of Blondes Have More Fun and Foolish Behavior, Tonight I'm Yours, Footloose, and Fancy Free. I'm talking about Carmine A Piece. And yes, it is a piece. I learned how to say it. If it's Vinny, it's Vinny Appice. And if it's Carmine, it's Carmine A Piece. And I love the lunacy of that. It just adds more to the craziness of rock and roll that I just love. Carmine, fantastic guest. And very honest, truthful man. Does not pull any punches. Lets you know exactly how he feels. And he's earned it. He has earned it. This guy is a killer. Toured with Ozzy. If you tour with Ozzy, you're a killer, right? Nugent, fucking Blue Murder. I saw Blue Murder at the Stone. Killer band, if you have not heard that. Tony Franklin on bass from The Firm. I saw The Firm. I saw it all. Yeah. I saw everyone, man. Fuck you. I saw everyone but Zeppelin and Skinner. I saw it all. I'm not throwing it out like that. I am just kind of blown away at how many fucking bands I've seen in my life. It's like Blue Murder back in 1989. Holy shit, was that a long time ago. Carmine, great guy. Talking cars, talking architecture, talking rock and roll. Talking drums, everything on this episode. I loved it. And thank you, Carmine. He will be back. At the end of the episode, he asked to come back. So he will be back. This episode is brought to you by my Patreon. Patreon.com/DeanDelRay. Brand new Patreoners out there. James Gardner, Jennifer Suttles, and Cheetah Coats. Thank you for joining the Patreon. Everybody, go out there and join the Patreon. Support the podcast. Get yourself 116 bonus episodes and a Zoom fest every week. I hang out on Zoom with the Patreoners, so join up. And I want to thank everybody on the Patreon. Such a cool, cool group of people. What else is going on? One more thing. I got to figure out what it is. I'm just kind of blurry from the Vegas run. But feeling good. I am feeling good, and I'm looking forward to Denver. I guess that's about it. Hope to see you guys out there in Denver. And don't forget about the merch. Let's get into it. Thank you, Carmine, for doing the show. The candles are definitely lit for Mr. Carmine Apice. Where are you at, man?
I'm in Florida, West Palm.
I got a good photo of you. Hold on. Let me get it here. Hold on. You love this. I just found it in my house a couple days ago. You remember this?
Oh, yeah. Definitely remember that. Would you get that out of the We magazine itself?
No, Nikki Six gave me this package of rad postcards, and there were all of these classic photos in it, which were cool.
When did they give you that? Recently?
Yeah.
How's he doing? I haven't talked to him in so long. These guys hard to get a hold of these days.
He's still good, man. He's living out there in Wyoming.
No kidding.
Yep. And
you have an email or something for him?
Yeah, I'll send it over to you.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd love to chat. He used to live around the corner from me.
Oh, in the valley?
Yeah, in the valley in Sherman Oaks.
Yeah.
And when they were just opening up for Ozzy, and I was with Ozzy,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. About Bark of the Moon tour.
Yeah. We used to go out to the Cafe 50s, it was a lunch and breakfast place. We'd have breakfast many times.
How you like in Florida?
I love Florida. Yeah. I got a studio in my guest house. I just walked through the studio, and that's where I recorded this Energy Overload record, and So Easy. And the Vanilla Fudge new single, did that. The drums in my studio, it's so easy. Sound never changes. We moved here June of last year, right in the middle of COVID. Been open the whole time here, I got to say. We discovered a New York bagel place, that it was like a New York deli almost,
Wow.
And every Saturday, me and my wife would go there for breakfast. And they had these shower curtains hanging from the ceiling, clear shower curtains that went all the way down to the edge of the booth, and that was the protection for the virus.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that in some places. It's hilarious. It's almost like some old, old New York peak booth stuff.
Yeah, it's great. I got a canal and a lake behind me. I got a pool in the front. It's a courtyard with a pool. What did it get to the house? You walk out from the courtyard door over a bridge over the pool into the front door of the house. Look at this.
Wow. Yeah. That's beautiful, man. Yeah. That's some Scarface shit there, man.
It's exactly right, dude. Exactly. It looks like a Frank Lloyd Wright house. We got the office in there. We got a view. Every room has a view of something. And I love it here. I got a 4-car garage. I get to house my cars, and we're rocking.
What cars you got?
I have a 2013 Maserati GT.
Wow.
And I got a 2018 F-Type Jaguar, and both supercharged. Oh. And my wife has a brand new Z, they're all gray. It's funny enough, different shades of gray.
Yeah.
And then we have an SUV.
Awesome.
I've always been a car fanatic. I've had all kinds of crazy cars. I just found the guy in England that bought my Pantera. I had the Pantera for 40 years from 1972 when I was with Jeff Beck. I had bought this Pantera and had it for 40 years. I sold it to some guy And then he sold it to somebody, and this guy in England bought it, shipped it to England, and tore it apart and is redoing the whole thing. He's doing it like an amazing job. It's going to be worth like 150 grand when he's done.
Damn.
And then he found out from the paperwork that I was the owner for 40 years, you know? So I had done an interview with the Pantera Magazine International. He got a hold of them and said that he has my Pantera and he'd like to talk to me. So we started on email. Then we started talking on WhatsApp. So it ended up, he's going to redo the whole car. So it's totally unique. And I knew this was my car because I saw the dashboard. I installed a clock. It's the only Pantera that has a clock like that. And it had three air vents for the air conditioning. And I knew that was mine. And part of my autograph that was on it was worn off. I knew that. And then he showed me the paperwork, you know, the original paperwork I got from the deal with my name on it that I signed. He said, wow, I can't believe this is your car. I said, that's my car. He sent me a picture of it when he first got it. I said, that's my car.
Wow.
And he said, I'm going to put it in car shows. I would love to call it the Carmine Peace Pantera, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, great. You know, I could send you on a piece of my stationery, like everybody that rode in it, that, you know, rode in that car.
Wow.
I said, you had Ted Nugent, you had Prince, Jeff Beck, Rod Stewart, Ozzy Osbourne, you know, all kinds of people in the car, you know?
Damn.
And he said, that would be fantastic. And then he's going to get a copy of my book, Stick It, you know, which has all stories about the car and there, and pictures of it and all that. So it was crazy. So I've been a car nut all my life. You know?
Run me through. Did you buy it at a Ford dealer in L.A.?
I did.
Was it brand new?
It was brand new. I had an XKE Jaguar at the time. And every time I drive by the dealer to my house, I'd see the red Pantera sitting in the window. And I didn't know what it was. And then I was on the road with Cactus. And I saw a yellow one in Birmingham, Alabama. And I ran and chased it down. And I asked the guy, what the hell is this? And he told me all about it. So then when I went home, I went in there. And the guy that sold me the Jaguar in the same dealer, it was a Jaguar Ford dealer.
Right.
Basically. And he said, oh, yeah, it's a Pantera. See, I said, well, I have to test drive. He said, give me the keys. Let me test drive it by myself. He says, I'm going to go myself?
Yeah.
I said, yeah. He said, I have your XKE as insurance. I said, okay. So I drove it. I couldn't believe it. It was like a freaking go-kart, you know? It was fast as hell. And I just got a big check-in for publishing for Cactus. I said, you know what? I'll give you my Jaguar. I'll give you money. And how much do I owe you? So I got it for $8,800.
Wow. Wow.
I think it cost me $100 a month for a year, something like that. And, but I had it for all that time, you know, so I sold it in 2011.
What made you sell it?
You know, I was getting older, you know, I was like, as a really heavy duty clutch.
Yeah.
You know, it's yep. harder to get in. It's automatic. Didn't have any of the now luxuries. You know, yeah, satellite radio, or power steering, or you know. So I sold it, and then I got a 2001 XKR Jaguar supercharged,
oh, yeah.
at 450 horsepower. So I had that for a while. Then I got the nudge for the Maserati, but I drove a brand new 2013 at the time XKR. F-type Jaguar, which I really liked it too. So it was between the Maserati used with 6,000 miles, 3 years old, or a brand new 16 F-type. I said, you know what? I got to get the Maserati. You know?
Yeah.
Same price.
Yeah.
So I got the Maserati and I had that now since 2016. And then in January, I started thinking about, we have a four-car garage here. We only had three cars in there. I said, I'm going to get something new, something else. And I was thinking maybe a classic Thunderbird, a T-Bird, or this. I said, you know what? Let me think about a Jaguar, you know, because I love the way they drive. So I test drove a few of them. Then I found a really great one, and it was a Fort Lauderdale. Beautiful car. I was still under warranty, and I drove it, and it was four-cylinder supercharged. Man, that thing is so fast.
Yeah.
So then I was thinking about, should I buy it? Should I not? And then Tim Bogert passed away. And I said, you know what? What am I waiting for? I got the money. I'm going to buy it. I'll just enjoy myself because you never know. So I bought it. And now I do 5 days in the Maserati and I switch cars. I do 5 days in the F-Type, you know, 5 days in Maserati, F-Type, and drive the SUV when it rains.
I love it. Old school rock star. Love it, man. You don't get that anymore, the rock star, you know?
No, because the rock stars don't make money now.
I know, right?
You know? I mean, unless you're a pop star, you get that 100, 250 million streams.
Yeah.
And you might make $500,000 on that. And then when you tour, you make money. But, you know, the rock star is the way we made it, you know, on record sales and publishing and all that. Forget about it. That's all down the tubes now.
It is interesting. I'm a huge fan of drummers and I've had most of the greats on here. So it's really cool to have you on finally and talk to you. But there is that weird world of drummers back in the day where, I mean, you were quite wise by, I don't know. And I wanted to ask you how you got in on this songwriting, you know, Do You Think I'm Sexy, Young Turks. Those are huge songs with Rod Stewart. Were you in the room while they were writing them? Because most drummers go, I'll come back later.
First of all, I grew up singing doo-wop.
Yeah.
And doo-wop bands and groups, you know. And then I majored in music in high school. I learned keyboard. I play guitar. I play bass. I play keyboard. 1968, I wrote my first song on Vanilla Fudge album. And I wrote another songs on 69 and the second album. The Cactus, we all wrote the songs together. BBA, we wrote the songs together, but I wrote one of the songs all myself, you know. And then when I went with Rod, it was always like Rod would say, I want a song like this, or I want a song like that. So on the first album, I missed the songwriting opportunities. On the second album, he said, I want a song like Missing You, Rolling Stones. So I went home, I had a keyboard and a drum machine. I put together some chord changes. And then I went to my buddy Dwayne Hitching's house, and we put the idea down on an 8-track TAC with a proper drum machine and his keyboard playing. And he came up with a little part for the bridge. And when we presented it to Rod, he loved it. So we used it, you know? And then we rearranged it a few times. Matter of fact, we had one version of it that I really liked, but Rod wanted to change a bunch of stuff. So we changed the whole arrangement. So I was producing a Japanese singer at the time. So we took that arrangement and I recorded it with, it was me, Earl Slick, Willie Weeks on bass, and Dwayne Hitchings on keyboard. And my friend Jim Diamond wrote a new melody and a new lyric called I Just Fell in Love Again with this chick singer in Japan who was big. And we released that and it did well. It was the original version of Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Wow.
And then, you know, with Rod, we rearranged the whole thing. But when we recorded, it had three guitars, drums, bass, and Dwayne and our keyboard player, you know. And then Tom Dowd came in with the idea of doing, well, let's get Tom Scott to do the solo. I'm going to get an orchestra playing, do it, you know, and I'll get some singers to sing that. And I'm going to bring in David Foster to play keyboard. Before you know it, we're on, instead of one 24 track, we're on two 24 tracks. So then, you know, when we originally recorded, it was big, three guitars, big drum sound, playing a disco kind of foreigner in the bass drum, but it was a big drum sound. And by the time Tom mixed it and finished it, it shrunk everything, you know, and it didn't sound like that big sound, that wall of sound that we had. And it sounded more like leaned over towards a disco kind of thing. But, you know, when it came out, went to number one in every country. So we said, I guess Tom was right.
That's a masterpiece song.
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. And since then, we did that. And I told Rod that Dwayne was involved. And he gave him a credit after a while on the song. And so then we did the next, after that, we did Passion.
Oh, great.
The next album, Rod said, I want something like a new wave. So I went to Dwayne's house and we came up with Young Turks.
Oh,
with God. That vibe. And then we played it to him. He loved it. I arranged all the harmonies on that, you know, and we used the drum machine on that. I didn't even play on that.
Wow.
I played hi-hats and cymbals.
Oh.
And because that was probably the very first pop record that played without the drums and used a drum machine, you know, and it was like a unique thing. And then he liked it so much, we did Tonight I'm Yours, which was the title track, yeah, in the same kind of arrangement. So I did both those songs with the drum machine. I played hi-hat and cymbals on it, because the hi-hat and cymbals on the drum machine sounded like crap.
Yeah.
we just took bass drum, bass, a snare drum, and maybe a couple of little fills here and there. But the cymbals were done by me in the studio. And that's how that happened. You know, so I've always been writing songs. And then I've gone on to later on in the 90s, King Cobra. I co-wrote all the songs on King Cobra. In the 90s, I did my Guitar Zeusch record, and me and Kelly Keeling co-wrote all the songs.
Wow.
You know, so I've been writing songs all my career. I got like 140, 150 songs in my ASCAP catalog.
Wow.
You know, and same thing now with all these songs with Perdomo Apiece, you know, I co-wrote all those songs.
It's that Rod Stewart era is just unreal. To think from Faces all the way up to Young Turks is mind-boggling. Passion, that's a great song.
Passion, great song, that album.
Oh.
Great song. I had Tim Bogert play on some of those tracks. I had Mark Stein sing with me on some of those tracks. And, you know, what about the first album with Rod?
Oh, come on.
Keep Hanging On.
Yeah, come on, man.
You know, because Rod said to me, man, I always loved the way the Fudge did Keep Me Hanging On. Oh. I said, yeah. You know, he said, I always wanted to do that. I said, well, let's do it. I'm in the band. It's a good excuse. So he said, you think so? I said, yeah, let's do it. And then we did it live. And then Tom Dow put an orchestra in the middle of it. It was fantastic. And hear him sing, set me free, right? You know, with that voice.
Yeah.
My voice is developing into that because I have this reflux that he has too, you know, that gave me this rasp in my voice now, you know. Matter of fact, last night I was singing People Get Ready with Vanilla Fudge on YouTube.
Yeah.
See if I could hit those notes. It's been 2 years ago we did that. Since then, I got this reflux crap going on, you know. So, but I can hit most of the notes. So
my buddy had that, and they did a bunch of tests, and they found out, you know, he was eating cereal at night. And they're like, you can't be having milk at night. That's where he's getting
well,
it.
Well, I use almond milk. I don't use
there
milk
you go.
Anymore.
There you go.
And there's a diet of avocados and broccoli and all that, but yeah, I eat some of that stuff, but I still eat what I regularly eat, you know.
Yeah,
Rod too. He says the same things. I just take the pill, you know.
I just take the pill.
Can't take the pill for forever, even though I think he's been taking it forever. And I just saw him a month ago here in Palm Beach. We went out for a drink for a couple of hours and shoot the shit, and you know, it was great. He took a picture of me and him. It was really fun.
Oh God,
with my new mafia look.
Yeah, I like it. I like your look. It's fucking great.
I like it too. I mean, it's easy to care for, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Let's see. I get up in the morning, wet it, and comb it back. It's done.
Yeah. It's interesting how much of a cult following Cactus has. Incredible, incredible band. And holy shit, those records were raw and just fire.
The newest record is really good. I don't know if you heard that one, Tightrope.
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah, man, go on YouTube, put in Cactus Tightrope.
Yeah.
Song Tightrope and just put in the whole record Tightrope, and every song is kick ass.
Wow.
It's probably one of the best Cactus records I've ever done.
Wow.
It is really phenomenal.
I got to dive into that.
In Classic Rock magazine in England, we got a 10 out of 10 for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
My podcast network's called Cactus Radio Network. I named it after.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cactus Radio Network.
We got some theme songs for you there, bro.
Yeah.
And I see you loaded with tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have any. Not a one.
You're in a different era. So, you know, you got the 60s, 70s. And then, you know, the first guy I saw with tattoos was Bon Scott, 1978. He came out. He had these tattoos. I was like, whoa, what the fuck is that guy? Yeah. You know, unbelievable.
Yeah, my daughter's loaded with him.
Yeah.
My son, you know, I have none.
Yeah.
My brother Vinny, zero. And he played with Sabbath and all this heavy, heavy man, you know, but he has not one.
Yeah. I mean, the two of you are just crushing drummers, man. I mean, Vinny, the Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell. I mean, he didn't play on Heaven and Hell, but, you know, that era of Sabbath, Dehumanizer and stuff is
good. I mean, we toured with Sabbath. We did Sabbath tour with with Cactus when they first came out. Whoa. It was Cactus and Sabbath doing gigs. And we almost had a fist fight with them because somebody in their camp stole a bag of pot and they punched our little roadie in the face. We almost went to like heads. We were like this far away from each other, ready to kill each other.
Wow.
Then the promoter came by and went out to play with Ozzy. We laughed about that. Because it ended up in Circus Magazine in a big story about how Cactus and Black Sabbath almost went to hands. Oh. You know? And we ended up being friends with all of them. You know? But Ozzy, you know, was good with Sabbath, but Ronnie was awesome with Sabbath.
Oh, that's my Sabbath.
I view that like I view Sammy Hagar and Van Halen. You know, Sammy on his own was okay. Great singer, good with Montrose. And when he joined Van Halen, it just, the level of both of them went up. The bar went up to the extreme. He was awesome with them.
That Ronnie stuff is just unreal, yeah. Man. You know, unreal.
Now you got to go online and also listen to King Cobra live at Sweden Rock Festival. We got Paul Shortino singing with us.
Oh, he's great.
He's great. And he was managed by Ronnie and Wendy and very close with him. And we wrote a song with King Cobra. We were doing our first album for Frontiers with Paul singing. It was called Monsters and Heroes. It was going to be about Halloween. And then Ronnie says, you know, I want to write this about Ronnie, you know,
yeah.
Like monsters and heroes, dragons and rainbows in the dark and monsters and heroes search for the sacred heart. You know, I said, wow, that's great. And me and him were writing it, you know, it's like you talk about writing.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, that's great. Let's do that. Let's use that as the chorus. And he came up with all these new lyrics. So me, him and Dave from King Cobra wrote this song. And then we recorded it, but we didn't give it to Frontiers. We gave it to Wendy Dio. We said, this song's about Ronnie. Why don't we have it as a tribute to Ronnie? And you can do whatever you want with it with King Cobra. Release it, have all the money go to the cancer fund.
Awesome.
So we did that for 5 years. Wow. Then when that was over, me and Vinny had the Peace Brothers album, you know, a Peace Sinister album. So on this album, I said to Vinny, look, we got the song we did with King Cobra. We could add you to it and we could arrange the drums. So you play, then I play, then you play, I play. And Paul's singing it. And we can use this as a tribute to Ronnie on our album. And it'd be by me and you. And so me, you, and Paul were all involved with Ronnie. So this makes this song really cool, you know? So he said, okay, so we put it on our album. When we do gigs now with me and Vinny, we play that song all the time. And people love it and they sing it. They sing the chorus. So when we did Sweden Rock with King Cobra, I did it with King Cobra on a Thursday night. And I did Saturday night with Vanilla Fudge at Sweden Rock.
Wow.
So we recorded both of them. But with King Cobra, we said, well, let's do a tribute to Ronnie by doing Heaven and Hell into Monsters and Heroes.
Wow.
But we didn't do Heaven and Hell with the band. We just did Heaven and Hell with Paul singing and the audience singing it.
Wow.
Right? And it's on YouTube now. It's on an album, King Cobra Live at Sweden Rock Festival on Deco Records, as far as your downloads. And so Paul sang it with the whole audience and they're singing, whoa, you know, 8,000-9,000 people singing it. Sing me a song, you know, the singer. And they're singing it right with Paul. And then right after that, we go into Monsters and Heroes, all about Ronnie. And the whole audience was singing Monsters and Heroes with us.
Wow.
It was a magic moment. You know, I got chills when we were doing it, you know.
Wow.
And it was just fantastic, you know.
I love the Blue Murder era. I had Blue Murder at the Stone in San Francisco. I think it was the Stone or the Omni, one of the two. I used to book those clubs when I was a kid. And you guys came in and played.
I think it was a Stone.
Yeah. And what a band. Band. What a band, dude. I mean, come on.
What a band.
Yeah.
That was when that band came out, we went to Japan, Burn Magazine. You remember Burn Magazine?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, the album was high in the charts, and they did an article of the greatest trios of all time. And they did The Cream. They did Jimi Hendrix. They did Beck Bogan a piece. And they did Blue Murder. I said, this is wild. I'm in the old one and the new one, you know? And we did 12,000 people there and they went crazy over Blue Murder.
Man.
And, you know, but something happened in America and Europe, it didn't get what it deserved.
It was great, man.
I didn't know why. I thought maybe it was the management. We really didn't have a management company proper. Everything else was in place. We had the label. John thinks that, you know, Geffen Records sort of blew it on purpose because, you know, he got fired from Whitesnake and got the same deal, got a good deal on Geffen. You know, Whitesnake sold 27 million albums and they had a lot of power at Geffen. And John thinks that, you know, Coverdale told him to, you know, not to make it happen.
Wow.
I said, I don't think so, man. I said, they paid you a lot of money. They paid the band a lot of money. We went over budget. They paid a fortune. We were $1 million down to Geffen Records, you know, with the videos and everything. I said, I don't think they're just going to blow $1 million because David Coverdale said that. I said, I think it's because we didn't have the right management. You know, we had nobody to push the label into the direction it needed to go and control us because we had no manager and we're telling MTV what to play. You know, what the hell do we know?
Yeah.
You know, and Geffen had an idea to use Valley of the Kings, get it going first, and then release Jelly Roll, you know, with the full power of MTV instead of the full power of MTV on Valley of the Kings. It wasn't the kind of song that was going to be a hit single. You know, you needed that hit single. I said, I think that's the problem. You know, so, and then after that, then grunge hit, and guys like us were dinosaurs. Nobody wanted to know from Blue Murder, even though we had the second album to do. So I was started doing some Vanilla Fudge stuff, and John said, no, you got to stay in Blue Murder. I said, I'm in Blue Murder. He said, he didn't want me to do that. So we kind of split ways, and then he tried to do the second album. And I love John, you know, we still talk. We haven't talked in a while, but we always still talk. And then he called me to do the second album, and he called Tony back to do it. And we did the second album. I think it was 12 tracks. We did 10 of the tracks. And on one of the tracks, I'm on Fire. Have you heard the second album?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on Fire. I had Kelly Keeling singing. And I said, man, this guy's a great voice. So when I came up with the idea to do Guitar Zeus, I was looking for somebody to go to Japan with Tony and me, because John was going as Blue Murder, which Japan didn't like. He had to change it to Sykes because Blue Murder wasn't that what he was bringing. So we went to Japan as Carmine Appice Super Session Volume 2. So I went there in 1982 with me and Rick Derringer, Tom Peterson, Eric Carmen, who played the Budokan, played all these big venues. You know, so I went there the second time with Volume 2 with Tony Franklin, Mitch Perry, me, and Kelly. Kelly sang and played guitar. And we did Blue Murder songs from the second album. And we did, you know, Hot Legs, and we did stuff from Tony's past, and we did great, you know. And meanwhile, that second Blue Murder album went platinum over there, you know. And so that was the end of it. Then Sykes started doing it as Blue Murder. And then me and Tony joined a band called Pearl, which was a Japanese band. And we were playing gigs at the same time Sykes was playing gigs. And Sykes was playing Blue Murder songs, but we were playing... Like, we played Hot Legs, we played a Firm song, and we played original stuff from this group, Pearl. When we released the first album, it broke into the charts at number 6. And we got a Japanese gold record, which you have to sell more product.
Really?
Get that, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so we were over there for all through the 90s. I was in Japan because grunge was going on here.
Yeah.
The last thing I did was Char, Bogart, Appice. Char was like the Jeff Beck of Japan. And we did BBA songs, we did his songs, we played the Budokan, we did 12,000 people in Tokyo, you know. And in the 2000s, I started coming back playing in America with Vanilla Fudge and then Cactus. And I did the Guitar Zeus record, the Volume 1 and 2 out of Japan with the big budgets from there. And I got every guitar player on there.
Yeah.
Right? And last year, I did a video with a song called Nobody Knew. And I got Brian May, me, Tony Franklin in the video.
Wow.
It's a lyric video. And then I did a video, catch this. It's called Code 19. It was done in 1996. And it was all about what we just lived through with COVID-19.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and Zach Wilde is on that one.
Oh, he's great. Okay. I just had him on the show.
Yeah, so Zach is a, you know, a great player, and he's on that song, Code 19. And we did a lyric video. He didn't play on it, you know, but I got me and Tony on it and a lyric video. And now we just did a new one from that album that was never released. And that video is a new video with the box set, 25th anniversary box set. It's going to have 37 songs. And it's got a new booklet with interviews with the guitar players, a new photo of my new image autographed, a medallion with my logo and a Guitar Zeus pick. And what's the other thing? And a T-shirt.
Wow.
As a box set on Deco Records. And it's got four LPs, three CDs. Beautiful package, but you got to listen to all this. It's all on YouTube and Spotify. The guitars, the Carmine Appice guitars. I mean, I got Yngwie.
Wow.
I got Richie Sambora. Mm. I got Brian May, Ted Nugent, Zach Wilde, Elliot Easton, Slash. I even got Steven Seagal.
What?
John McEnroe.
Steven Seagal throwing some leads down?
Yeah. No, he's doing kind of blues with. I got him on with Seymour Duncan.
Oh, wow.
You know I can't even remember all the guys. You know, Leslie West, Jennifer Batten, Pat Travers, the guy Cha from Japan, and another guy from Korea. I ended up doing a Guitar Zeus Japan and a Guitar Zeus Korea. You know, it's been an unbelievable series that sold a lot of records, you know, everywhere but here, you know.
Well, you know, there's that era of the 70s.
Yeah, the 90s. That was all in the 90s.
But I mean, in the 70s, you know, Robin Trower and Pat Travers and these guys and Nugent could sell out. I mean, I saw Nugent. I put up the ticket stub yesterday, September 2nd, 1978. I saw him sell out the Oakland Coliseum where the Oakland A's play.
Yeah.
And there were 70,000 people there going crazy. Yeah. You know,
that's a good friend. It's a friend of mine. He played twice on Guitar Zeus 1 and Guitar Zeus 2. And we do a show called Hanging and Banging, me and my brother. And we're on episode number 68. You know, we've had everybody on there. We had Joe Bonamassa, Ted Nugent, Warren Haynes, John Five, Eddie from Kiss, from Twisted Sister. We had Tommy from Kiss, Bruce from Kiss, Eric Singer from Kiss. Paul Schaefer, Darlene Love. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. So Ted was on that twice for us as well. But we're good friends, you know, Ted. The other day I got a text from the band. When I played with Tex, it was Ted Nugent. And we were playing arenas at the time, selling out arenas. It was Ted Nugent, Derek St. Holmes, Dave Cusweeney, and me. And the other day I got a text from all of them. It was a multiple texts, and it was just bullshit. It's funny. I said, man, we got to do a reunion.
Oh God, that'd be great. That 82 Nugent album's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good record. And that started me playing at Pasha Records. And after that I developed the Pasha drum sound with the engineer Dwayne Barron. And the first project they did was Quiet Riot's first album. So that was my drum sound that I created at Pasha on that record.
Wow.
I sold 5 million records. You know, so I've always had my hand in stuff that I never really, you know, nobody knew that my hand was in it, you know.
Yeah, that's wild. Did you ever have a set of those North drums or Simmons electronics? No? How about Simmons?
I had syndromes. Yeah. But I never used them like drums. I used them as a sound effect.
Right.
Like I hit them and get this crazy sound, and I turn my cymbal, like, and it was like, wow, and people would think, wow, what kind of cymbal is that? I used it as an effect, a showmanship effect.
Yeah,
you know, but they since broke, and then nobody knows how to fix them. I would love to keep using them, but I can't because nobody knows how to fix them.
So wild. Yeah. What happened with that Vinnie Vincent fiasco?
Oh my God, that guy's a total idiot. You know, he's really talented.
Yeah, oh yeah, God.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I had him in my band, Carmine and the Rockers, and '78, when I was at Rod, I was going to do a solo album on the side with him. And I remember '79, we went out and did tours, original stuff. You know, we played with Joe Perry, and it was a great band. You know, had a bass player named Zero,
and
the guitar Eddie Spaghetti, and Vinnie Cassano.
Right, he was in your band, huh? Back then,
he was in my band. Yeah, And we wrote these great songs and everything. We were ready to get a record deal. Then he acted like a total asshole and said, oh, well, you know, I wrote this song, even though it's because of my connections and everything, we're getting the record deal. So we agreed we would split everything with everybody, make it even. So whoever writes a song doesn't run around in a Lamborghini and the other guy has a Volkswagen.
Right.
You know? So he agreed to that. And then when it was time to do it, he backed out. So when he backed out, we said, well, fuck this. We blew the band out, you know? So then I got a call from Paul Stanley and Gene and saying, we got this guy, Vinny Cassano, to join Kiss. What do you think? I said, dude, he's a great talent, great songwriter, decent singer, great guitar player, but he's trouble.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, you know, it's up to you guys. I said, I tell you, he's trouble. They hired him. And what happened?
Wow.
You tell me what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. Trouble. Same thing. Yeah.
Same
trouble.
Thing, trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and then he disappeared.
Yep.
You know, and then somehow the guy who was promoting that return, when you've seen that video, that big heavy guy, Derek called me and said, hey, we're going to do a gig with Vinnie Vincent. And it would be really cool. We know you're friends with him and you knew him and everything. And, you know, like my career went on to do fine things. I ended up not meeting him, you know, but I wasn't holding any grudges or nothing. So he said, I would love for you to talk to him. Maybe you can do the gig with him. Something like that. And I can't even remember what went on, you know, because it was so fast and quick. I said, yeah, okay. So I called him. He answered the phone. We talked on the phone for 2 hours.
Wow.
You know, and he actually told me, he said, I never got to thank you for, I said, for what? He said, because when I was looking for a drummer for my Vinnie Vincent project, I borrowed one of your drum sets. Alan Miller, my old manager, me and my brother Vinny had this drum rental thing going. It's called the Peace Brothers Drum Rental. You know, we rented drums out to studios. So he lent him a drum set so he could use to audition people or whatever he was using it for. He said, I used it for a long time and I never talked to you again. So I never got to thank you. So I said, oh, no problem, man. You know, so we started talking about, well, let's do this gig. Yeah, that'd be great. Well, who do you want to get on bass? He said, I don't know. I said, why don't we get Tony Franklin on bass? Because he's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like me and him were in Blue Murder and this group, Pearl. He's a tremendous bass player, nice guy. He said, yeah, okay. So we listened to Blue Murder and then he said, yeah, let's get Tony. So we got Tony. And then he had Robert Fleischman to do it. And then Robert didn't want to do it. So I got this guy, Jim Crean, that sings with me and my brother in Drum Wars. I said, he could sing all that stuff. And honestly, I hated Vinnie Vincent invasion music, not because of the music and what it was, because the mix on the album was so bad. The guitar was so loud, you couldn't hear anything else. Yeah. It was ridiculous. You know, the guitar was the loudest thing. The drums were buried. The bass was buried. The vocal was buried most of the time. And when a solo came, the guitar was so loud. There was no groove. It was just a bunch of like him trying to be Yngwie when I know he plays better than that, you know?
So oh, yeah, he said, killed it in Kiss, you know?
Kiss, he was great because he played like Vinny.
Yep.
And then when the Vinny Vincent invasion, he was trying to outdo Yngwie. Well, come on, Yngwie is tremendous.
Yeah.
You don't outdo Yngwie. And Yngwie played on my record, my guitars, and he played tremendous on my record. He played more bluesy than I ever heard him play before.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's great about my guitars. I had a version of the song with Brian May playing a wah-wah.
Wow.
And you never heard
Brian never May heard that.
A wah-wah. Yeah. I haven't even released that yet. You know, now that I'm thinking of it, I should have put that on the box set. Or maybe I'll do it in addition to the box set on the download or something.
To me, it seemed like Vinny couldn't even play guitar. They just wouldn't play any electric guitar. It was like, the guy had these big press conferences and then Vinny came in, he just kind of strum a couple chords. It was like,
and
what's going on here?
People paid this outrageous amount of money to see this guy do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and on the gig, that guy Derek paid Vinny like, I don't know how much, thousands and thousands of dollars as a deposit. He paid us some money as a deposit.
Right.
When the thing blew out, I said, Derek, you know, we'll give you your money back. He said, no, you keep it. You put the time aside. He said, you know, Vinny kept all the money. He said, he gave me a bunch of signed posters for me to sell to make my money back.
Wow.
I said, man, what a fucking douchebag.
Did you guys ever rehearse?
No, did nothing. I did a gig in Nashville, August. Me and my brother did a convention. It was a rock and pod convention. And we did a masterclass and a talk at SIR. And we had some people there, you know, and the guys that set us up, Vinny did an event like that there. He had like five people that paid $2,500 to see him a piece, you know? And he said he did play.
Wow.
I said, did he play decent? Because he said he did that crap like on his Vinnie Vincent album.
Oh, the Yngwie stuff.
Yeah. So, but he said he did play. So he obviously can play something.
Right.
But he's just, his attitude is so fucked up, you know? I mean, come on. He did, what did he do? A couple of years, one album with Kiss?
Yeah.
$2,500 a ticket to see him play for fucking 10 minutes. I mean, that's fucking ripoff. I don't want to see like a headline comment. A piece says, you know, Vinnie Vincent's there, blah, blah, blah. The other day I said something about the vaccine.
I saw it. Boy,
it ended up on all these websites. I was just kidding. I'm kidding with the kid. And I got the vaccine. You know, it's not like I'm against the vaccine. I got the vaccine. But you read all this stuff about it saying it's going to kill you, not going to kill you, it's good for you, and who knows, you know? So that I just said, hey, I got the vaccine. I don't know if it's going to help me or kill me. We laughed. I put a thing on my web, on my Facebook, because I was so pissed off because that first site that it came up on, my wife said, this is a bad site for you to be on. You know, this is like all these crazy fucks on this site, you know? So I said, well, I didn't put it on there, you know? And then I listened to it. I said, you can hear me fucking laughing.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And then it went on some other side, went on Blabbermouth. Then you get these other assholes on Blabbermouth.
Yeah.
You know, just like these assholes. I mean, such asshole people that leave comments that who the fuck do they think they are? You know? I mean, you go on like on Bonzo Bash. Somebody plays Led Zeppelin song and they don't play it like Bonzo, and they fucking get put down for it. Like they're fucking useless. You know, it's all full of himself. I go, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
One guy said, I made a career out of talking about how I influenced Bonzo.
Yeah.
Fucking make a career out of that.
Yeah.
You know, people ask me what, you know, nobody gets when I met Bonzo, he was nobody. He was Joe Schmo, you know? When I called Ludwig to get drums for John Bonham, they didn't know who John Bonham was. They took my word that he was great and they're going to be big. And they gave him a freaking endorsement. You know, if I didn't do that, he probably would have got an endorsement later, 6 months later. But, you know, he got the endorsement right out of the boot. Nobody even knew who he was. So I can't talk about that. And I sound like I'm egoing out and I'm running my career on John Bonham? Fuck no, man.
That's insane.
I've plenty of shit on my own.
Well,
that I didn't need John Bonham for. I hate all that shit. Blabbermouth. And the big one with Blabbermouth for me was the wig that I wear. The big, and what about that wig he wears? Dude, this is fucking hair. I'm going to get a wig. I'm not going to get a gray and fucking black wig.
Yeah.
Right?
A gray and black. I love you, dude.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Holy shit, man.
Yeah. I mean, I took a lot of fucking time dyeing my hair black and fucking purple, you know, because it was a cool image. And I've been doing it since 1980, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's called rock and roll, man.
Yeah. I just got sick of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did this and people are liking it. You know?
Yeah. I think you look great, dude. How old are you?
I'll be 75 in December.
Fucking amazing, man. 75, been playing rock and roll your entire life. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing better than that. You know?
I know. You know, and like that Joe Walsh song, my Maserati is 185.
Yeah.
I have accountants pay for it all. That's me. You know, I mean, I've been into cars. I've had accountants paying my bills since 1968. I never made a house payment in my life.
I'm
a spoiled rocker, but you know, it's true. I mean, yeah, I couldn't live without them. Anything I need, I call them. I say, look, did you pay this guy? Did you do that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And my brother Vinny said, I didn't get paid yet for the Drum War shows. I said, well, I don't know. We sent it out. So now, can you overnight, you know, direct deposit? I don't do any of that stuff, you know? I mean, I have accountants. I pay them. I've been paying them for 55 years.
I mean, look at that fucking house you're sitting in, man. I think things are good.
Things are good. My wife was a radio talk show host in New York.
Oh, yeah?
Great. Before that, she was a Harvard Business School graduate, had a window manufacturing business. She made her own money. She's got more money than I got.
Wow.
And, you know, we found this house together. We pay for it together.
Yeah.
You know, and it's beautiful. I mean, you know, look at the views here. It's just amazing. You know?
I love it. I love it.
I mean, it's gorgeous. And we redid the whole inside of this house, too.
It's great. Let me ask you, how did this Pink Floyd thing come about back in the day? What was going on with that?
I got a phone call.
Like Mason wasn't around or what was happening?
No, he was around. When it was Bob Ezrin called me. I just came back from Canada. I was doing a movie, Black Roses. It was a really cheaply done heavy metal horror movie that had a Big Pussy in it.
You know? Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, it's the first movie.
Love him.
I was in it, and got some guys from some of the daytime series were in it. And we did the soundtrack with different guys, and we used some of the King Cobra music in there. And then they called me and said, hey, you want to be the drummer in the music? And you know, everyone's confused with me and my brother, right?
Right.
Apice or Apice. So Joe Morello used to call me Apache. So my character was Vinny Apache in the movie. So when I came back from the movie, I called up. He called up and left a message on my machine. I said, Carmine, I got this band I'm producing, Screaming for Carmine Drum Fills. I said, really? So I called him back. I said, who is it? He says, Pink Floyd. I go, where's Nick? He goes, oh, he'll be there. But he's been racing his Ferrari. His calluses are soft and everything. So I went down and I did it.
Wow.
You know, it was awesome. You know, a lot of fun. And we didn't talk much about the album.
Yeah, let's get into that. Come on, let's get into it.
So real quickly, Perdomo and, you know, Fernando called me via Tom Dowd's daughter and asked me if I would play on a couple of tracks. So I just came down to Florida. I just had my studio and I really was not knowing how to run it, you know, exactly. I did a couple of tracks already, but, you know, I wanted more. When he asked me to do it, I said, oh, I could learn how to run my studio. So I sent him something that I wrote on my iPad. It was instrumental. I sent it to him. So he sent it back to me. And I put the drums on it, and that song was called Thunder. And then we had it mixed, and I said, wow, this sounds great. You know, so I'll send you another one. So I sent him the other one called Funky Jackson. He sent it back to me, sounded great. And he played bass, guitar, and keyboard.
Wow.
I played drums. So I played it another one. So I said, you send me some. So he sent me something, which we called a Little Havana, which was kind of a rock thing with a little taste of Latin in there. So I played that, and I put a little bit of heavy Latin groove in the end, but heavy, fat rock drums on it, you know? And then when it ended, I did this press roll, and I went into like this fast thing, like a cactus parchment farm. And I just played drums, and I kicked ass on it. I played accents and fills. I said, why don't you try and put guitar and put music to what I did at the end, just to tie the two songs together? So he did that, and I said, wow, this sounds great. So then we called that Big Havana, right? So then I said, you know what? I got some drum tracks I'd like to give you and see what you can do with it. So the first one I gave him was the song Rocket to the Sun.
Wow.
And he said what he did was took the groove, took the way I did fills and the dynamics and the way I placed, you know, the fills, and which dictated verses and choruses to him. And the way I played melodically kind of dictated the chord structure and the melodies he had in his head. So I gave him four songs like that. We gave him the Blown Speaker Boogie. We gave him Flower Child, we gave him Pure Ecstasy, and gave him Rocket to the Sun, you know? And then the rest of them were done the other way. You know, we'd either send me an idea or I send him an idea. We ended up having 18 songs. And I said, you know what? I love this stuff. I think people would like this. Because it's instrumental, but it's not jazz rock. It's really rock.
Right.
Aggressive rock, but it's crazy stuff, time signatures and great melodies, hooks. I think I'm going to call my buddy who owns Cleopatra Records and ask him if he'd be interested in releasing this. So I did. He loved it. And so we picked 12 songs, and two of them being the covers, jazz rock instrumental reggae version of Do You Think I'm Sexy, which is really off the wall.
Yeah.
And then the Maybe I'm Amazed instrumental guitar. And the great thing about Fernando, he makes the guitar sound like a voice, you know, it talks to you. You know, as my drums talk to people, his voice talks to people.
I love these labels that have been basically putting out Rock Frontier, Cleopatra and Shrapnel, yeah. Mike Varney, you know, these guys are and even with metal, with Brian Slagle over at Metal Blade, you know, these guys SPV, are the guys.
SPV in Europe.
Yeah. They're making the records, man, that, you know, they're just, you know, shooting fish into barrels. It's like, here, man, here you guys go. I can't believe nobody else is making these records, you know.
But it's hard to promote them, like the Cactus record.
Yeah.
You need to listen to the Cactus. You need to listen to the Guitar Zeus.
I'm going
to
today.
You need to listen to a piece, Sinister record.
Yeah.
So on that record, we have so many people on that record, you know, guitar players. And I can't even remember all of them. We have Greg Goldie on there. We've got guys from King Cobra. We've got Robin McCauley singing, you know, got Paul Shortino singing. We got all kinds of people. Johnny Rod playing bass. We got Jorgen from Government Mule playing bass. We got Tony Franklin playing bass. You know, it's an all-star album, and it's a great record, you know, and we did okay with it, you know, but not great. Because I got sick at the end of the tour in Europe. We almost died, so we had to cut the tour short.
Whoa, that's a what happened to story. You? Oh, shit, you got to go. You almost died. You're like, wait, cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, we can set another one up with John.
Let's do it, man. Let's talk again, for real.
Yeah, that'd be
get my info.
You know what? Listen to all these records.
Yep.
And then call John. Let's set up another one.
Let's do it, for sure.
Okay, and you can play some of that stuff, because the Guitar Zeus stuff is amazing. And the way I came up with that concept is really funny. You know, it wasn't anything really planned. It was meant as a joke at first, you know.
It's so good to talk to you, man. What an honor to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, man. I mean,
you're one of the kings, and
thank you.
And that is the truth. That's all there is to it, man.
Thank you, bro. Thank you, man.
Thank you, brother. See ya.
Bye-bye. Later. Bye-bye.